The best year ever for gay rights in America. That's the Atlantic headline about yesterday's historic Supreme Court decisions. Just 34 years after the Stonewall riots, gays and lesbians can now get married in 13 states. Millions of dollars and endless resources have been poured into gay marriage. So how has this fight changed LGBT politics? While this weekend's Pride Parade will be one of the most joyous celebrations in gay history, many are criticizing the event for bringing in military recruiters for the first time and several corporate sponsors. Is what was once a radical liberating movement changed its course to assimilate? And with increasing mainstream acceptance, what does being gay or queer mean today? Join us after the news.
BBC News with Marianne Marshall. Ecuador says it's withdrawing from a preferential trade deal with the United States. The announcement comes as the country is considering an asylum application from the former intelligence contractor Edward Snowden, who's wanted by Washington for leaking details of an American surveillance program. From Quito, here's Will Grant.
It was a typically unequivocal response from the government of Rafael Correa. The country's trade preferences with the US had become an instrument of blackmail, the communications minister Fernando Alvarado said, and Ecuador unilaterally and irrevocably renounces said preferences. It comes just a day after the chairman of the US Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Bob Menendez, warned Ecuador that its preferential trade relations would be at risk if it grants political asylum to the fugitive whistleblower Edward Snowden.
Earlier, President Obama said he wanted Mr. Snowden in U.S. custody because Washington doesn't know what other secrets he may reveal. But he said the U.S. wouldn't engage in any wheeling and dealing over the issue. Speaking on the first day of his three-nation African tour, President Obama has praised Senegal for being one of the most stable democracies in Africa. From Dakar, Thomas Fessy.
President Obama said his administration had been inspired by the way the people of Senegal solved an election crisis last year with a peaceful vote. He then turned to his Senegalese counterpart, Macky Sall, and commended him for the reforms he is undertaking to strengthen the country's institutions. Mr. Obama said Senegal could be a great example for the rest of the continent.
The South African president says Nelson Mandela's condition has improved. Jacob Zuma said that Mr. Mandela was much better than during his visit last night. His condition is still described as critical but stable. His eldest daughter, Makaziwe, said that on Wednesday, Mr. Mandela was responding and trying to open his eyes, but she heavily criticized the international media's presence at the hospital. Gabriel Gatehouse reports.
Nelson Mandela's oldest daughter accused international media of violating boundaries in its coverage of her father's health. It's truly like vultures, she said on South African television, waiting for the last carcass. Her rebuke comes as the latest update from the presidency said Mr. Mandela's condition, while still critical, had stabilized. Earlier, one of Nelson Mandela's granddaughters had emerged from the hospital to thank well-wishers for their messages of support. They had, she said, given the family strength to carry on.
Well-wishers have gathered outside Mr. Mandela's former home in Soweto tonight for an all-night prayer vigil. A judge in Britain has handed down life sentences to five men convicted of grooming young girls for sex. Two other members of the paedophile ring in the city of Oxford were jailed for 7 years. The men were mainly of Pakistani heritage, and the victims were as young as 11 years old. World News from the BBC. European Union auditors say more than $650 million of EU aid to Africa may have been badly spent. The auditors told a British parliamentary inquiry that fewer than half of 23 water projects adequately met the needs of poor Africans. But the auditors said the main problem was obtaining long-term agreement from African governments and communities about how water supplies would be paid for. Police in Chile have arrested 122 people, many of them children, during pre-dawn raids on schools taken over by their pupils. The buildings are due to be used as polling stations in primary elections this weekend. The occupation is part of a two-year campaign for educational reforms. Police in the remote mountainous region of northern Pakistan say three women have been shot dead by a male relative who appears to have believed that they had brought shame on their family. The mother and her two daughters were allegedly killed by her stepson. Here's Orla Geerin.
Human rights campaigners believe the motive for the triple murder was an innocent family video in which the women's two daughters appear. They say neighbours have told them the video was to blame, because the woman's stepson thought it was an assault on the family's honour. In the mobile phone footage seen by the BBC, the young women are filmed smiling and laughing in the rain outside their family home with some little girls. In the remote northern region, where so-called honour killings are common, women are seldom seen by men other than their relatives.
The Venezuelan authorities say they found the remains of a small plane that vanished nearly 6 months ago, carrying the heir of the Italian fashion house, Vittorio Missoni, and five other people. The twin-engine aircraft disappeared in January after taking off from Los Roques Islands in the Caribbean. Officials haven't revealed the location of the wreckage. BBC World Service News.
Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Yesterday, the Supreme Court came out with two historic rulings. One decision strikes down the Defense of Marriage Act, and the other dismisses Proposition 8, which allows gays and lesbians in California to get married. But amidst the rejoicing over newfound marriage rights, some gay and straight activists say marriage is an inherently problematic system to begin with, and LGBT people should not be seeking inclusion into a system couched in superiority and privilege. And the fight for equality is far from over. 29% of San Francisco's homeless population is queer, and many transgender people, especially trans women of color, still face workplace discrimination and outright violence. Will legal equality lead to greater political power, and will legal equality affect homeless people or transgender people? Another issue of raging importance within the LGBT community is concerns about the upcoming Pride Parade taking place this Sunday. Previous grand marshals of the Pride Parade in San Francisco elected whistleblower Bradley Manning to be the official grand marshal of the parade, but the decision was denied by the Pride Board. Members said any mention of Manning during the event would, quote, not be tolerated. And we just got word that military recruiters will be at Pride for the very first time, and corporate and bank sponsors include AT&T and Bank of America. So is what was once a radical liberating movement changed its course to the status quo? With increasing mainstream acceptance, what does being gay or queer mean today? Today we are joined by Matilda Bernstein Sycamore, author and editor of multiple queer anti-assimilationist anthologies. Her new memoir is The End of San Francisco. She's also author of That's Revolting, Queer Strategies for Resisting Assimilation. Hi, Matilda. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Earl Plant, CEO of San Francisco Pride. Earl oversees the annual production of SF Pride Celebration and Parade and is responsible for the overall administration and management of programming and personnel. Hi, Earl. Welcome to the show.
Great to be with your audience today.
Great to have you. So, Earl, I want to start off with you. Before the show, we were all talking about Stonewall, and just to think that 44 years since the Stonewall riots, where this was a crackdown on a very popular gay bar in New York, it led to so many actions. Hundreds of thousands of people took to the streets. 44 years later, gays and lesbians can now get married, and the Atlantic headline today is the best year ever for gay rights in America. How are you feeling today? How far have we really come here?
Well, I'm naturally a glass half full kind of guy, but I'm really jubilant about the decision, being there at City Hall to witness it, feel the emotion of that moment. That historic situation was really... it really hit me upon waves, really reflecting upon the trailblazers who really laid the groundwork for where we are today. You know, if you look at our movement with respect, and I'm a studier of history, you compare our modern gay rights movement compared to the women's and civil rights movement, we've made such amazing, swift progress in respect to those mass movements in a relatively short amount of time. So it's really humbling. It's really heartwarming. It's a sense of jubilation. But, you know, there's still lots of work to do. In over 30 states in the union, you still could be fired for being LGBT. Hate crimes are still a huge issue across this country. Suicidality is still a big concern for our youth. Mm-hmm. And our elderly are still ostracized and isolated within the particular community. So, you know, we still have, you know, certainly we want to celebrate what happened, a historic win for us, but there's still work to do.
And Matilda, same question to you. How are you feeling today, and how far has the LGBTQ movement come?
Well, as most of your listeners will know, you know, just one day before the Supreme Court decision in the Defense of Marriage Act, the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act.
Right.
And some have called these two decisions contradictory, but I actually think they're not contradictory at all. I think the gay marriage movement has consistently used the rhetoric that marriage is the last thing standing in the way of full citizenship, right? And so what they're talking about is the full citizenship of gay and lesbian people like Anderson Cooper or Ellen DeGeneres, wealthy, white, upper-class gay people for whom something like tax breaks or inheritance rights might be the last thing standing in the way of full citizenship, right? But what about for the rest of us? And I think what the gay marriage movement has done is to say that basic needs like housing and health care and the right to stay in this country or leave if you want to, a sex life that matters, food on the table, should only be available if you're willing and able to conform to an outdated, tacky, oppressive institution, the institution of marriage, as you mentioned, which is still, you know, a central, you know, cause of anti-woman, anti-queer, anti-trans violence, and not to mention, which is originally about preserving the wealth of wealthy, upper-class white families. And so, for me, it's kind of horrifying to see the ways in which, you know, the needs of the most vulnerable people, you know, some of the issues that Earl mentioned, actually, you know, issues like, you know, homelessness, AIDS services, youth care, trans health care, drug treatment, prisoner support, senior care, you know, all of the needs of the most vulnerable queers are pushed to the side in favor of privileging, you know, the people who already have the most access.
Well, and I'd love to give out the number early, because a lot of people are talking about this because this decision is so historic. And, you know, what does it really mean for the future of LGBT politics? As Matilda said, there's been so much focus, so millions and millions of dollars and resources poured into gay marriage. So what are your thoughts on that focus? If you're part of the gay marriage movement, if you've poured money into it, if you've worked for it, how are you feeling today? And what do you think this means for the future of LGBT politics? Will legal equality lead to more rights for people like homeless youth or transgender people, people who still face workplace discrimination? We'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Or leave a comment on our website. With increasing mainstream acceptance, I was just reading a story this morning about a wide variety of Republicans who are giving money to the gay marriage movement. The headline said, it's not just for gays, it's also for politics, obviously. But, I mean, this is reaching such a wide range of movements and people. So what are your thoughts on that? And when we say the gay marriage movement, Earl, what do we really mean?
Well, I think my, you know, I certainly heard Matilda's comments in terms of, you know, I should mention that I, first and foremost, I'm a feminist, so I certainly, and in terms of socioeconomic justice, that's something that I've been working and advocating for over 20 years now. So I you know, in terms of that, that issue, that's something that is integrally involved and has been involved in kind of how I do my work. It's not an add-on. It's something that's intrinsic to who I am in terms of my consciousness, in terms of how I operate, and it's something that I push in every arena that I move forward, just by the presence of who I am, an African-American man, a gay man who, you know, I think just by the force of who I am and what I've been about and what I do, something that I take a lot of pride in. But in terms of the marriage equality issue piece, that from my perspective, you know, I've evolved on that question myself. You know, 10 years ago, I wasn't someone who was really on the bandwagon in terms of that issue. I've evolved just in terms of thinking that folks should be able to have the opportunity to pick and choose the institutions that they want to, and then also the other question around benefits. You know, there's over 1,000 benefits that are associated with marriage that I think that, you know, really have a big impact in people's lives. And, you know, when you hear all these horror stories of folks being denied access to their partners' bedsides, you know, when they're under deathbeds and, you know, inheriting taxes. And we contribute to this society in big ways and small ways, and we need to be respected and honored for what we bring to the table. So just because of who we are and who we love, we should not be, marginalized and accepted for that piece. So I've evolved, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that I necessarily would, get a marriage license, but I think that folks should have the opportunity to pick and choose what that makes sense for them in terms of their lives. So the government or religion or none of those institutions has a role to play in terms of denying that right of love and happiness. And I think that's an intrinsic American value that we need to support as a movement.
Oh, well, we've got a number of people on the line. So let's hear from Anaconda in San Francisco. Hi, Anaconda. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you today? Thanks for having this discussion.
Sure. Thanks for calling.
So I just wanted to make the comment that one of the reasons we are constantly mimicking heteronormative behaviors and saying that it is a right, because I do not believe marriage is a right. I believe it's a privilege. And I think that it's because we don't know our own history, and the fact that we have been engaged in things like one of the fathers of Taoist thought was a queer cross-dressing man, and we don't know our history, and we don't have anything to hold on to. So we are constantly trying to assimilate into the straight society because that's all we know.
And so talk a little bit more about that. When you say assimilate into the straight society, what do you mean exactly? And what does that mean for the future of the movement?
Well, I think that the fact that we don't understand that we have a culture and our culture was not created around monogamy, for example. It was not created around a heteronormative Christian type of behavior. It is only recently when we've been able to come out that we've started to want to protect what is ours. And that to me shows like sort of this idea of assimilating into a mainstream society and look at the world instead of holding close to our values that saved our community from the AIDS crisis, and we're able to survive in very dangerous conditions for so long, and now we're just going to give it up to be just like everyone else. And to me, lose the loss of my culture and my cultural relevance is really why I'm not so into the belief that marriage is a right.
All right. Well, thank you for calling, Anaconda. Matilda, what do you think about Anaconda's comments about just the lack of knowledge about history? Do you think part of this is because of the AIDS crisis?
Well, I think Anaconda makes really good points. And I think, you know, you brought up in the introduction Stonewall. And, of course, Stonewall, you know, was a rebellion against police control over queer bodies and lives, you know. And early gay liberation was about saying, you know, calling for an end to the nuclear family, an end to organized religion, an end to dominant institutions of oppression like the military or marriage or, you know, long-term monogamous coupledom as a requirement. And I think now it's all about becoming part of those dominant institutions of oppression. And I think that, to me, is what's so horrifying.
Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. I think, so for example, you know, the gay establishment movement, you know, over the last two decades has come to focus almost exclusively on marriage and military inclusion. And I think the military is the best example. You know, Earl brought up the idea that people should be able to pick and choose the institutions that they're a part of. But I think most of the listeners to this show will agree that no one should be able to pick and choose to go abroad and kill people in unjust wars that the United States is fighting all over the world, or, you know, press a button in Nevada and destroy an entire village in Pakistan or Somalia. And I think You know, so that focus on military inclusion, which started, actually, you brought up the AIDS crisis, and I think that focus, I think, really came to play around 1993 with the March on Washington for Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual Rights, was the formal title then, which at that point was the largest, and still might be the largest, national gay protest, you know, ever. And that was a time when, you know, the AIDS crisis in the U.S. was affecting pretty much every queer person, and people had lost entire, you know, social networks, you know, entire communities. And, you know, that was a moment when the focus of the national gay movement could have been on universal health care, right? Something that would have saved people's lives and would have affected everyone in the United States. And instead, the focus was on repealing the ban on, you know, gay people being able to serve in the U.S. military. And I think, so instead of, you know, and I think in many ways, those are both reactions to the AIDS crisis. But instead of saying, we need to take care of everyone, we need to make sure that no one dies because they don't have access to health care, it became a battle for the right to go abroad and, you know, wave a rainbow flag while you're killing unarmed people of color and getting away with it. And I think that shift in focus for the gay movement, you know, continues today. It's this focus on law and order, this smiling, happy, hyper-patriotic, we're just like you, you know, gay vision of normalcy, this idea that, you know, gay people are not, you know, weak or effete and, you know, can go abroad and fight to kill just like, you know, any straight homophobe, for me is really tragic, because when you become part of dominant institutions of oppression, you know, what is the point? Becoming the oppressor and calling it equality is not progress, as far as I'm concerned.
What are your thoughts on that, Earl? Did you see that as progress, or do you see that as progress?
My worldview is very different from that. I certainly am a studier of history and know the history of our movement. You know, the movements evolve and change, or they stand idle. You know, that I think it's the natural evolution of our movement. Certainly, I don't look at the world in terms of a binary distinction of gay, straight, black, white. You know, that there's a lot of blurring there. And our movement really is about exploding all those definitions and allowing folks to be who and what they are and, you know, what they want to be. As long as you're not hurting other people in the public marketplace, they should be allowed to be who they are, period. So, and with respect to the issue around resources and emphasis, certainly, you know, marriage equality and, you know, issues with respect to, you know, gays in the military, you know, that's the March of 93. So I know that that was, you know, a big emphasis point, prioritization. But certainly, you know, I've worked both nationally, locally, and on state level with LGBT-focused and AIDS-focused organizations. And, you know, we certainly did a lot of and still do a lot of work around hate crimes bill, the ENDA, AIDS funding. You know, those are all issues, you know, inclusion of trans into kind of, you know, the movement more broadly. So these are issues of prioritization. Certainly, yeah, you know, I think that, you know, I think the media plays a big role in terms of how they focus in on certain priorities, too. So it's not just about our internal issues with respect to that. The other piece is just in terms of the visibility piece, you know, the consciousness, you know, I think being in the visible kind of public square in terms of, you know, you referenced Ellen and other things like that earlier, you know, that certainly has had a big impact in people's consciousness. You know, there are stereotypes and misperceptions that were out there for years that about the community that were dispelled by just folks just living their lives. So, you know, and having folks in their personal existences, peers, friends, loved ones who were LGBT, and, you know, the world didn't fall in. So, you know, but also the organizational work. So those are really the three issues, primary reasons why we have made such dramatic progress. So I think the issue really is about prioritization. Certainly, now that, you know, marriage equality has been won here in California. But there's still obviously a lot of work to do on many levels. And I think it's a question of prioritization. That's certainly an issue that we need to discuss as a movement. But, you know, but I don't think that other issues are being neglected. I don't agree with that characterization.
That is Earl Plant. He is CEO of San Francisco Pride. He used to work for the National Black Justice Coalition, a civil rights organization focused on the rights of LGBT people of color. We're also joined by Matilda Bernstein Sycamore, author and editor of multiple queer anti-assimilationist anthologies. Her new memoir is called The End of San Francisco. And today we are talking about the future of LGBT politics. What has the focus on gay marriage, so many millions of dollars, so many resources, how has that affected LGBT politics? And will legal equality, what will it mean for trans people, homeless youth, people who still face workplace discrimination? Do you think that the focus on gay marriage has caused the movement to neglect some of these other issues? What are your thoughts on that? We've got full lines. We'll have one open in a couple minutes, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment. Actually, don't leave a comment on our website because I think we're having some problems with it. But you can email us feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's go next to Joanne in San Francisco. Hi, Joanne. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much.
Sure.
Sorry. Love your show.
Thank you.
And I want to thank, and it's what prompted me to call earlier, was the gentleman who just spoke, and you gave me such a great laugh, and I couldn't agree more about the flag-waving, rainbow-waving patriots to have the right to go over to Iraq and kill too. Anyway, I'm not sure who that gentleman was.
Oh, that's Matilda.
Matilda. Oh, okay. Well, Matilda, anyway, that was wonderful. Thank you so much. You gave me a good laugh.
Oh, and wonderful.
Yes,
thank you.
Absolutely. Of course, the homeless and people without money are being ignored. Same as in the heterosexual community. Those people don't have much power, generally don't vote. I never hear any politicians from the president on down to local city council people discuss that problem, be it transgender, gay, straight. Homeless people there's not really much reason to reach out to them because they're not voting for you. It's the middle class people who you want to reach out to. So absolutely. And as a final thing about having the right to go over to, as a woman, I've often thought that as well. It's like, oh, well, you know, the whole equality thing, we too can go over there now and kill people. Although it goes without saying that if straight people should be able to and men should be able to, I guess we should too. But without a doubt, homeless people and people without resources are being ignored. There's no reason to pay attention to them because they generally don't vote. So thank you so much, and I love your show.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Joanne. We've got about a minute before break. And Earl, can you talk a little bit about the decision process behind allowing military recruiters to be at the Pride event in San Francisco for the first time ever?
Well, the process is pretty open. You know, it's just like anything else, like our martial process. You know, folks can, if they want to put a contingent together, you know, we're very libertarian in that sense. As long as the organization is not in direct violation of our bylaws, they can march. You know, we have a very robust, diverse contingent. We have close to 250 contingents signed up for this year's parade, one of the largest ever. So that's really, I think, a strength of our community, that we really go, especially in particular San Francisco. We have such a diverse set of views and opinions. And I think that's something, a true treasure, is something that's being valued and encouraged on all levels. We continue to want to do that.
And it's going to be the National Guard. They're the ones with the booths. Is that right?
Say it again?
It'll be the National Guard?
I believe so, yes.
And that is Earl Plant, CEO of San Francisco Pride. Matilda Bernstein Sycamore is author and editor of a number of queer anti-assimilationist anthologies. Today we're talking about how the focus on gay marriage has affected the LGBT movement. What will it mean for gay youth, trans people? What are your thoughts on the future of LGBT politics? We'll be back after this. Mm-hmm.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective that you have not yet heard in today's discussion or a question you feel needs to be answered on the program, please get in touch. Here's the number, 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email your question or comment. Oh, no, Rose said we can't, huh? Because the email is down. Please, just use the phone today, 866-798-8255.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. We will have a conversation about the state of local reporting with Tim Redmond, former editor of the San Francisco Bay Guardian. He's been there for decades and is no longer at the Guardian. He is blogging. We'll talk about why he's no longer there and just the state of local reporting. We'll also talk about the state of investigative reporting with Andres Cedil. He's producer of the must-see frontline documentary Rape in the Fields. It's about the hidden reality of rape on the job for immigrant women working in the fields in the United States. You can watch it online. Just go to Front Page's website. We'll also put it on our Facebook page. And be sure to tune in for that tomorrow. And if you have a guest idea or a show idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about the state of LGBT politics. How has the focus on gay marriage affected this movement, especially when you look at the history, where it's come from? Where do you think it's going? Do you think that legal equality will lead to greater political power? Do you think it'll lead to more resources for homeless gay youth, for trans people, for people who still face workplace discrimination and outright violence? I mean, there have been gay hate crimes in even Manhattan, near Stonewall in San Francisco in the last couple of months. So what do you think this means for this movement? The toll-free number, we have actually full lines. We'll have one open in a couple minutes, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Earl Plant, CEO of San Francisco Pride. He used to work for the National Black Justice Coalition. Matilda Bernstein Sycamore is author and editor of a number of queer anti-assimilationist anthologies. Her new memoir is The End of San Francisco. And we've got a number of callers on the line, so why don't we go through a few, and then we'll get responses from Matilda and Earl. Let's hear from Wanda in Berkeley. Hi, Wanda.
Hi. Thank you. I was so inspired to hear Matilda, and I feel that we all need to. Matilda is an example to all of us of critical thinking, of not just accepting knee-jerk what we hear with these movements. And sometimes these movements, our movements, are co-opted by corporations who get their agendas through dividing us. And anyway, I just wanted to say that I really appreciate, and I think we all, it's the empowerment of individuals who think critically and look at issues rather than just blindly accepting what we're told. So thank you, Matilda.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for calling, Wanda. And let's go next to Andy in Redwood City. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Rose. Good morning. Hey, I think this ruling on DOMA and Proposition 8 with lack of standing should have been no surprise to anybody, a no-brainer. You had Steve Schwartzman of Blackstone running around promoting the rights of marriage for gay people on Wall Street. You had Lloyd Blankfein of Goldman Sachs. You had all the corporations signing up to this. If you didn't sign up to this, you were a pariah. The corporations were behind this. Big money, Wall Street. There's a lot of individuals with gay leanings in Wall Street that have a lot of bucks. No surprises here. And one gentleman on your panel said marriage is a privilege, not a right. No, no, no. It's a right. You have every right. This was a no-brainer. This should have happened years and years ago. And yes, it did take all the air out of the room in the progressive movement in a lot of ways. I don't know how many meetings I went to that were just dedicated to this issue, and it took away from a lot of other problems we have in the generic community. A lot of other problems.
Well, and
thank you.
And can I ask you something, Andy?
Yes.
Well, what do you think? I mean, it's easy for us to say that in the Bay Area. And, you know, even in a place like San Francisco.
I came from the East Coast.
Okay, well, so the East Coast.
We were doing it there, too.
So what about like, a gay kid in rural Oklahoma? I mean, when I went on a road trip in Oklahoma about 5 years ago, I mean, so many kids were being thrown out of their homes for being gay.
Well, you have Neanderthal areas all over this country. There are skinheads all over, and they will always be with us.
But doesn't this really mean something for those kids who have, you know, hardly any support network?
I didn't say this was bad.
No, I know. I'm just asking.
No surprise. The corporations were all behind this. No surprise.
All right. Well, thank you. We'll get a response and just...
Great.
Can I speak on this question? I don't think it's about corporations saying about who you love and who you should be able to love. That what does the corporation have to do with who I decide to have make love to? That has no relevance whatsoever to that. I don't understand that statement at all.
Andy? Did we drop Andy? What do you think about that, Matilda? I mean...
Well, I think the point, you know, I think to come back to the issue, you know, of homeless queers in San Francisco, I think so many of the, you know, queer kids who come to San Francisco, you know, who come from, you know, families where they're abused by their parents, when they go to school and they're told that they're worthless, then they live in, you know, a homophobic and transphobic world, and they come to San Francisco to try to find a safe space to express themselves, to find one another, to create, you know, love and merrymaking and sexual splendor and, you know, political incendiary, you know, ideas on their own terms. And they get to San Francisco, and as we all know, and this is true of most, you know, destination cities for that are known for, you know, public expressions of queerness, it's so expensive. Like, how can people possibly afford it? And so, you know, so many queer kids, so many, you know, trans people end up homeless and on the streets in San Francisco because it's impossible to live there. And I think, you know, the sort of focus on something like marriage, for example, like, oh, well, you tell a kid who's, say, let's say 15 years old and ran away from home because they were being abused, and you say, well, wait a second, you know, now we have gay marriage. What is that going to do for that kid?
Well,
you know,
I'll tell you what it's going to do for that kid. It's going to give them hope, as Harvey Milk said. It's going to give them hope that not something that can be discarded, and that they have some value, and that their hope, that their life can mean something. I'm not saying that what you're saying is necessarily wrong. I'm just saying it there should be a range of options and choices. Like, in my mind, marriage or not married, they're equal in my mind. Like, people should have that choice to enter whatever relationship that they feel is appropriate for them, and that's their personal decision. That's what our movement really is about. It's not about saying one thing is better or superior to the other. I'm not saying that the way that you're going is saying that it's excluding folks who want to enter into a committed monogamous relationship, that they should be allowed to do that. Just like merrymaking or whatever else you want to have folks want to do, that in my mind, they're equal. There's certainly some question in terms of the larger movement in terms of, you know, I will grant you that some folks might think that marriage is the be-all and end-all, you know, and it's taking out the oxygen in the room sometimes, but that's not from my perspective. When I go into these discussions and engage folks, they're all on equal terms for me. It's not about, you know, and I don't. There's not a value judgment for whatever thing that folks want to enter into. That's their choice. Period.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Andy. And let's go next to Tommy Avicola-Mecca, who is a longtime LGBT activist in San Francisco. Hi, Tommy. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, Rose.
So Tommy, what are your thoughts? I know you wrote a piece about SF Pride accepting military recruiters for the first time. And there's criticism of the corporate and bank sponsors, AT&T, Bank of America. Just what are your thoughts on where Pride is going today?
Well, first of all, I want to say I've been involved with the movement for 43 years, so I've been a part of the history that Earl talks about. And I was part of Gay Liberation, the original Gay Liberation, and I was an organizer of the 1972 Gay Pride March in Philadelphia, which was the first Gay Pride March in Philadelphia. I want to say it really, really, really bothers me that it's okay with Pride to have military recruiters who very definitely put LGBT folks in harm's way, very, very, very realistically, by sending them over to other countries to kill people and to be killed. Not to mention women who get sent over, and women, and with the amount of rape that's happening in the military right now against women, it's certainly, you know, sending women over there is putting them in harm's way. So yeah, these military recruiters coming in to recruit people, which is putting them in harm's way. And then we've got banks who are, you know, part of Pride, giving money, having floats, getting a lot of legitimacy, and buying, you know, scoring a lot of points in our community in the parade, like Wells Fargo, which is one of the prime evictors of people out of their homes through foreclosure, including LGBT folks. I mean, I was not long ago standing outside of an African-American gay man with AIDS, his home, defending his home because the sheriff was going to come and remove him. Unfortunately, that guy is now sleeping in his van. And so these are the kind of sponsors they have. So they can have military recruiters, and they can have these type of corporate people, but they can't have Bradley Manning as a grand marshal? I mean, there's something wrong with that picture. You know, Bradley Manning has put no one in harm's way except himself. Bradley Manning is definitely a hero because he has exposed U.S. war crimes. He's the kind of person we would have honored back 43 years ago when I was involved with gay pride marches.
So, Tommy, stay on the line and let's get a response from Earl. So, Earl, is it true that previous grand marshals of the Pride Parade elected whistleblower Bradley Manning to be the official grand marshal, and then the decision was denied by the Pride board? Is that how it went down?
Well, you know, there's a process. There's a couple of things. We've apologized in terms of the situation with respect to Mr. Manning. There's mistakes made in terms of the election process. We're working diligently to make sure that that doesn't happen again. There also was an issue in terms of vetting candidates for the slate that were under consideration for this particular realm of the marshal process. It's selected by past grand marshals, which is about 90 people. So, you know, from the board's perspective, you know, Mr. Manning was not eligible in terms of the bylaws with respect to that particular.
But why did it take so much time to figure that out?
So let me finish, please. So the issue is that was done, you know, supporters of Mr. Manning certainly can put him on up for consideration for other aspects, marshal considerations, but not this particular one because he's not local, and you know he's by default not someone who could be even considered. So in that sense, it's a moot issue from the board's perspective.
But it took Pride. It took initially the response was not from Pride. Was not, oh, he doesn't qualify. Initially, the response was he's putting our troops in harm's way. And then it took a while for Pride to say, oh, he doesn't qualify. Why wasn't he disqualified immediately if it was a violation of the bylaws to have him nominated in the first place?
Yeah, I think that's a good. You raise a good point. You know, I'm that's why I said that mistakes were made. We apologize for that. It certainly should have expedited, kind of, you know, in terms of making sure that he was not even up for consideration because he's not eligible. So yeah, I've apologized that in many public forums, publicly, and so you know that I'm not denying that there were mistakes made. You know, so we're going to do better and ensure that moving forward that something like this never happens again. You know, I'm not denying that there was mistakes made. So I'm not. I'm not saying that.
Why not simply reinstate him?
Say it again?
Why not simply reinstate him? There's been a groundswell of support from not only our community, but from all over the world asking for him to be reinstated. Why didn't the board simply reinstate him?
The board certainly could have, I wasn't in those conversations. I'm not on the board, but the board could have, the board is under the purview to have a number of nominations for other categories that they could have put Mr. Manning up for consideration. Yeah, certainly that's something that could be done. But for this particular one, that was, you know, from the board's perspective, it was almost unanimous that he was not eligible. So in this particular category, that was the issue for them.
And
granted, it took them a while to kind of get to that place and figure that out. But you know, the policy is the policy.
And Tommy, we've got a number of calls, but I just wanted to ask you quickly, is Bradley Manning going to be honored at the Dyke March this year?
Bradley Manning's being honored by both the Trans and the Dyke Marches, and we have a contingent in the parade. It's meeting at Beale and Howard at 10 a.m., so I hope people will join us. And as far as we're concerned, Bradley Manning is Grand Marshal, and we will be marching to honor him as the Grand Marshal.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Tommy. That's Tommy Avicola-Mecca. He's been an LGBT rights activist for 43 years. He's got a blog. He writes about all of these issues. We'll put a link on our website right after the show. Thanks for calling in, Tommy. And we've got just over 10 minutes left and full lines. I'm going to go through a few, and then we'll get responses from Earl Plant, CEO of San Francisco Pride, and Matilda Bernstein Sycamore, author and editor of a number of queer anti-assimilationist anthologies. Her new memoir is The End of San Francisco. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org, and I will do my best to try to get your question or comment in. Let's go next to Claire calling, Claire Bayard calling from Project Catalyst. Hi, Claire. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks so much for having this conversation today. And Tommy and Matilda, thank you so much for your comments. Yeah, I am a queer organizer on issues of racism and militarism, and I work with anti-war veterans and service members, and a lot of us have been working on the Bradley Manning contingent for Pride, which everyone is invited to join that contingent and come out, and you can get more information through the Bradley Manning Support Network at bradleymanning.org. But I think this is a really important moment to come back to grassroots community work that's not beholden to corporations, and to be really clear about what queer liberation is struggling for. I think we can come back to Audre Lorde's words about how we don't have single-issue fights because we're not leading single-issue lives, and come back to the fact that queer liberation is intrinsically tied to racial and economic and gender justice on a broader scale. And as Matilda was saying, to really be taking seriously our responsibility that we're living inside an empire that's creating a lot of misery for people around the globe as well as here. And the mainstreaming of the marriage equality agenda is, it's narrowing down our ambition to deeply reshape the society we currently have that's structured through these systems of domination that say some people's lives are more important and some people deserve rights that other people don't, including marriage and the military. And within queer liberation, there's a call for us to really recreate society around different values. And that's what we need to come back to for queer liberation, that we're trying to create a different way of living together that's actually based on meeting human needs and on nourishing people's gifts and talents and passions and love for each other. So I think when we're looking at that as being the heart of queer liberation, it's very easy to see how both marriage and the military are institutions that are not designed to create that shift. They're not designed for racial, economic, or gender justice. And if we can be centering the members of our queer community who continue to be the most marginalized, as we've been speaking about today, including transgender women of color, poor and homeless folks, undocumented queers.
And Claire, can I just ask you quickly, because we have about five more people on the line. Do you think this is, it seems like this is a good opportunity to raise awareness about these other issues for people who may not have been on board in the beginning? I mean, I just watched a video about this amazing family has this gay son, and the father embraced it, and now they have these meetings at their home. I don't remember where they live, somewhere in the middle of the country with no resources, and now their home has become this resource. And do you think that this is a moment to really raise awareness about things like homeless youth and what trans people face on a regular basis?
Of course it is, absolutely, because it's important to count as victories wherever there are steps around moving forward. And right now there is a step around conversation awareness and opening up these questions of what do we actually want that is beyond this limited idea of marriage equality? And again, like, what does queer liberation mean given what an incredibly broad and diverse community that umbrella term is describing? So now that there is that attention and now that there are shifts that can create that opening, I think this is the moment for us to really ground those politics and move it forward so that we don't get stuck here.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Claire. That's Claire Bayard with Project Catalyst. They're a center for political education and movement building in the Bay Area. Thank you. Let's go next to Mark in San Francisco. Hi, Mark.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
I'm also one of those people who was an activist back in from the 60s, and back when I was very young, I was going to SNCC meetings and nuclear disarmament meetings, and the gay movement came out of those exact movements. It was part of the women's movement. It was part of the civil rights movement for black people's rights. It was part of the anti-war movement. That's maybe why I relate so strongly to Bradley Manning. And I think we should just pay a little bit of attention, instead of this controversy about is he Grand Marshal, isn't he Grand Marshal, to this person as a 21-year-old kid who was completely isolated in the Midwest, who had no friends, who was so gay that people wouldn't talk to him. Mm-hmm. Even gay people wouldn't talk to him because guilt by association. We all know folks like that. He went into the military to get an education afterwards. Five times it was advised that this 5'5", 100-pound person would not be sent overseas. I don't know his exact weight. And he was sent to Iraq, was completely isolated. None of the people in the military wanted to be his roommate. He was online. He was a computer geek. And while the government was saying that it wasn't droning civilians and that it didn't kill the Reuters reporters, he was seeing that that was not true. He publicized that. He's certainly a gay hero.
Well, Mark, thank you for calling in. I hate to cut you off. I just want to make sure we get others on the line, and we'll get a comment in just a couple of minutes. But thank you. We're getting a lot of questions about Bradley Manning via email, and I'll ask those in a couple minutes. Thank you for calling, Mark. Let's go next to Sue from the Harvey Milk Democratic Club. Hi, Sue. Welcome to the show. Do we have Sue? Oh, sorry about that, Sue. We'll get to a couple callers and our next caller. Actually, I've got an email. A couple people wanted to know, Earl, was the decision to rescind Bradley Manning as Grand Marshal tied to the military setting up recruitment booths at Pride? Earl?
If I could weigh on this for a moment.
Is Earl still there? I think we lost Earl. Matilda, go ahead. We'll reconnect with Earl.
Sure. I mean, I think it's fascinating that San Francisco Pride found it so threatening to have Bradley Manning, who is in prison, elected as a Grand Marshal, but they have no problem welcoming military recruiters, you know, to the Pride Parade to, you know, recruit queers in unjust wars. And I think if we take a look at the board of San Francisco Pride, Lisa Williams, who's the president, runs a public relations firm. And so it's fascinating that someone who's the head of a public relations firm would be considered a great choice to be the director of the board of San Francisco Pride. And I think it's no coincidence because, you know, if we look at the corporate sponsors like Budweiser Light, Clear Channel, Nike, Verizon, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, PG&E, you know, we see the ways in which pandering to multinational corporations has become more important for San Francisco Pride than any kind of celebration of resistance, community, culture, or community building. And I think that's been going on for a long time. I remember in 2002 when the major slogan of Budweiser, "Be yourself, make it a Bud," which was the largest corporate sponsor of Pride and continues to be at that point. And that slogan became the official slogan of Pride, became "Be yourself, change the world." So the idea was every time you drink an overpriced Bud that you purchase at Pride, you're changing the world. And I think that's the agenda of San Francisco Pride and of Pride celebrations across the country where, you know, pandering to corporations, where target marketing has been more important than a celebration of, you know, creating culture on our own terms, or, you know, a celebration of doing something like Bradley Manning, you know, blowing the whistle on, you know, the viciousness of, you know, U.S. imperialism. And I think it's tragic when, you know, it becomes so meaningless, but also so vicious at the same time, you know, in the sense of, you know, Earl sort of talked about.
And Matilda, let me just ask you quickly.
Yes,
do
definitely.
You think, I mean, do you think that when you're talking about corporations, I was taking money out of an ATM. I think, I don't remember which bank, but it had the rainbow on the screen. I mean, do you think this reaches out to the mainstream? And is this important to you?
Well, I think what it does is give more money to the same corporations that are, you know, oppressing people all over the world. You know, if we take a look at Wells Fargo, like Tommy mentioned, you know, how many foreclosures are they responsible for? If we take a look at Bank of America or Clear Channel, you know, who it was famous for Rush Limbaugh or Nike, famous for sweatshops all over the world. When we support those businesses, we're not changing anything. You know, we're just making the whole world safer for multinational corporations to plunder indigenous resources and get away with it.
Well, we've got time for just a few more calls. We've got Sue back from the Harvey Milk Democratic Club. Hi, Sue.
Good morning, Rose. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So, you know, first of all, I'm going to address two points in one. Earl, please stop using corporate speak and saying mistakes were made. The Pride Board needs to be accountable for the fact that, first of all, it couldn't find a good reason to deny Bradley Manning's grand marshalhood. But second of all, when it was announced that the Pride celebration was going to feature a military recruitment table, just admit it. You are not willing to question the military's involvement in things like Iraq. You want to be seen as mainstream. You want to be seen as a good patriot and supporting the military. But the fact is, the mainstream is changing. The mainstream is questioning the military. So why don't you just own up and admit that this is what you want?
Well, unfortunately, we can't get Earl to respond because we lost him and we can't seem to connect with him. Unfortunately, but we've only got about a minute left, so we probably won't have him back on the show. But thank you for calling in, Sue. Matilda, final thoughts from you. I mean, you write about this. You look at this very closely. What's in store for the future of the LGBT movement? Where do you want it to go?
Well, I think what we need to get back to is, you know, talking about basic needs first. So things like housing and health care, the right to stay in this country or leave if you want to, a sex life that matters, love, you know, all these things should be universally available to everyone. You know, we need to get back to talking about people who are the most marginalized. So like undocumented people or queer prisoners or queer youth or queers living on the streets or queer migrants, you know, queer kids growing up in abusive families, you know, and we need to, you know, talk about issues that actually matter to more people. You know, we need to get back to talking about gender and sexual and social and political self-determination for everyone as a starting point. Those things don't happen after marriage or after military or after hate crimes legislation. When you, you know, make dominant institutions of oppression more powerful, there's no possibility for creating alternatives.
Matilda Bernstein Sycamore is author of multiple queer anti-assimilationist anthologies. Her new memoir is The End of San Francisco. Thank you for joining us, Matilda.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. And I also want to thank Earl Plant, CEO of San Francisco Pride. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Thanks for listening. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll have a conversation about the state of local reporting with Tim Redmond, former editor of the San Francisco Bay Guardian. We'll also speak with Andres Sediel, producer of the frontline documentary Rape in the Fields, which reveals the hidden reality of rape on the job for immigrant women working in America's fields. What will it take to get issues like this in the media's reporting on immigration? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.